Today's episode of the Sidious Mag Podcast on the Sidious Mag Podcast Network is brought to you by Stride. Nearly every runner faces the same problem, and that's nailing an even pace on your runs. Sometimes it's out of your control. Mother Nature might have some plans of her own with the wind, the heat, and the humidity. You could be training at altitude like some of the members of Tin Man Elite do. Maybe you're getting ready for the Boston Marathon and you're just trying to nail down hill work. All these things can mess with you as you're trying to nail down a pace and stay at a consistent effort. That's where Stride comes in to help. I've been using it. My friend and training partner and the co-host of Runners of NYC, Leanne Sherrick, who just ran the trials, she's been using it. I just gave one to my recurring co-host, Matt Meyer, on this podcast. So Stride is making it possible to nail down that pacing in difficult conditions. It's a super lightweight pod that sits on your shoe and shoots a number onto your watch. You're probably wondering, what's that number? It's called power. It takes into account grade, wind, heat, humidity, and altitude to adjust to the pace that you need to hit. You just aim for a consistent power from start to finish based off that number. More than 24 runners use this at the U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials in Atlanta. Now it's your turn. Go to stride.com/sidious to learn more about this game changer. That's stryd.com/sidious. I've been enjoying it, and I've incorporated it into my training. So thanks to Stride for supporting the podcast. My guest for today's show is Lee Troop. He is a 3-time Olympian and a coach out of Boulder, Colorado. Most notably of late, you've probably seen his name floating around. He is the coach to the newly minted U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials runner-up, Jake Riley. Riley finished second behind Galen Rupp in 2:10.02, which was a personal best for him on one of the most challenging courses. He got down his 2:10.36 personal best from Chicago of last year. That was a huge breakout for him, because the previous personal best before Chicago was 2:13.16 from 2014. And a lot happened in his life from that point on. He finished 15th at the 2016 marathon trials. He was 12th on the track in the 10,000 meters in 2016. And then he injured his Achilles. From there, he vowed never to race again until he was fully healthy, and that took a while. He went through a divorce. He relocated from Michigan to Chicago. And eventually he found Lee Troop along the way. It's been a work in progress. And before we get Jake on the show, which is something that we're closing in on and hoping to happen very soon, I decided to check in with his coach for some more context on how one of the best stories of the 2020 U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials came to be. So without further ado, here is Coach Lee Troop. Okay, Coach, so first let's talk about Atlanta and just kind of Saturday's day. Has it felt like a reality yet to you?
No, it hasn't sunk in at all. My head's still spinning, and, you know, it just the way everything played out, and then, of course, how everything has continued on in the last 72 hours since, it's just been really crazy. But I think, you know, the most important thing is just, you know, just seeing a young kid that had a dream and, you know, was just so focused on it and has had to have gone through so much in his personal life, you know, just get a little bit of vindication has just been, it's been really humbling. So I haven't seen the race. You know, I'm still trying to catch up on messages and emails and everything like that. So by the weekend, I'm hoping I can have watched the race and absorbed it a little bit more and maybe have a little bit more clearer perspective.
Typically, what is the advisable, hangover? How long can you let this go on for as a coach before you decide to reel it back and be like, all right, it's time to focus on what's ahead now?
I don't know. I flew home and then I've been straight into coaching. You know, I coach beginners and intermediates and I still have other elites. So my life, like, I've come home and I'm straight back into reality. You know, I've got 3 kids and, you know, so, like, I was up at 1 a.m. this morning. I've been up since then and, I don't know. It's just I don't know what the hangover period is for this. I mean, I've obviously had success as a coach before, and, you know, you certainly enjoy the moment. And, you know, I think for me, the difference is that it's not about me. It's about the athlete. And the athlete, you know, they're the ones that should celebrate. They're the ones that should enjoy it. They're the ones that should absorb the moment and make the most of it, because, you know, we hope it may come around again, but it might not come around again. And I think for me, fortunately, you know, I'd been an athlete in a previous life, and so my coaching is all about the people that I coach. So I'm not one that you know, is certainly going to be having this as a big hangover period for me. It's certainly something where I'm now back to work and already focused on all the other athletes that I coach, as I said, whether they're beginner, intermediate, or my other elite athletes.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned your own success as an athlete, as a coach with other athletes. What makes Jake different? Because you've already used the word vindication and kind of his backstory, and when he spoke about it pretty openly after the press conferences, he just kind of laid it all out there. You know, he had run 2:13 in 2014. He was 15th at the previous trials, 12th in the 10K, injures his Achilles, comes back 3 years later, relocates, you know, from Michigan to Chicago. What did you inherit when the story between the two of you began?
Yeah, I mean, and also on top of that, you know, he was going through a divorce, and, you know, when Jake arrived in Boulder, like, there was just a frustrated, disappointed, concerned individual that was trying to make light of the situation, and was looking for something, you know. And sometimes it's hard to look for things when you're sort of running away from your past. And you know, when Jake got here, he could sense the frustration, and I won't say anger, but just disappointment. And he's just like, you know, this is my last roll of the dice. And, you know, it's just been, like, on a personal level, extremely rewarding. I mean, you know, I tell the story that, you know, we went and saw the sports doctor, Jason Glowney, and, you know, Jake was just argumentative with Jason on what possibly the prognosis was going to be. And, you know, and I sort of got it, and when Jason Glowney left the room, I asked him, what was his story, and, you know, and he was just like, I've heard it all before, coach, you know, I'm not hearing anything different. And, you know, I just sort of said to him, look, I've never been in this situation with you. I don't know what previously has happened. I don't know what the diagnosis has been, but we're here with someone that I know and I trust. And if he comes in and says that you need surgery, then that's the path we go down. And, you know, as a side note to that, I am anti-surgery. I think it's got to be the last roll of the dice. And so, you know, and I said, if you don't want to do this and you don't believe in this, like, there's 50 other states that you can drive to and get a job for the rest of your life, because it'll be your running career's over. And I think, you know, when Jason come in and, you know, he'd explain what would happen, and, you know, he was obviously going through a divorce, so then he'd have to work out his whole health insurance situation and whether he could even afford to do it, you know, like, there was just so much going on. And, you know, but that's, you know, that's the, you know, situation that that you're in as an athlete. You either roll the dice or you don't, and at that moment Jake decided to roll the dice. And I think for him, you know, he, I guess, put the sword down, believed in me and trusted the process. And it's been a very long process, you know, a day by day, week by week, month by month situation. And certainly, you know, the fact that he had such an outstanding run on Saturday, which followed up on his outstanding run from Chicago, I won't forget the first run back where he got to run for 1 minute and walk for 9 minutes, you know. And so every day's been critical in that, but more importantly, he's been able to just, you know, embrace it and go with it, and he got rewarded for it.
How do you foster that hope that a comeback is possible when you see that run where it's, you know, 1 minute on, you know, and that's all that they can do at that time, and they still want to keep this thing going? How do you keep that going as a coach?
That's an amazing question, and I really don't know. And that's probably the surreal part of this whole thing, is that he did it. You know, like I use the analogy, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. You know, Jake bought into this. Like, Jake's mindset, his professionalism, like, he's extremely astute. He's very meticulous and methodical. And I don't know, it worked, you know. It worked. And I think, you know, at a time where I was struggling myself personally, obviously after the death of Jonathan and, you know, just trying to get confidence within myself, I'd certainly lost a lot of that and really questioned whether I wanted to keep on coaching. I just think at that time, without it being spoken about, we were both just able to trust in each other and believe in each other. And, you know, obviously we got the results. But, I mean, he's such an easygoing kid. He does the work. He does everything, you know, right to the letter. I mean, he's a Stanford kid, right? So he's extremely, you know, well-educated, but he's not over the top. And as I said, you know, what happened on Saturday is just the stuff of dreams. And, you know, he deserves every bit of it. And, you know, like, I want him to spend the next month enjoying it. And he's obviously got a lot of traction worldwide. And, you know, he deserves to tell his story and enjoy it. But once we get to the end of March, you know, like, that's it. It's like, all right, now, you know, we're not going to just be training so that you can be called an Olympian. We're going to train and get to Sapporo and race like a true Olympian. So I'm excited for that. Again, like, nothing changed. Just once he gets back into training, we just do the same thing we did before Chicago and the same thing we did before Atlanta, but we just do it better.
Now, apologies if I don't know the timeline off the top of my head, but you mentioned, I mean, John Gray and his passing, and it's sort of like, was there an overlap with Jake running with him? And because for some of this too, he was wearing the old, you know, Boulder Track Club singlet, and that's kind of, I think you said it on Twitter or something like that, this was an excellent way to close a chapter on that track club's history. And so in a way, Jake's performance was just, you know, this seems like it was a moment for the team, and just over the years, like, this has been building for this one moment.
Yeah, I mean, look, it just, a lot of things changed for me, and certainly, you know, I started the Boulder Track Club 10 years ago, but, you know, when you build up a club and you bring in so many different personalities, sometimes there's things that click and things that don't, and particularly when Jonathan died, I didn't have the support of the club, and, you know, another reason why I guess I sort of spiraled out of the love of coaching. Prior to this year, so like leading into November, December, you know, the five kids that I had, we had agreed that we would start, you know, being just known as Team Boulder and represent as Team Boulder. But as we sort of got closer to the trials, I really didn't want to have, you know, the continual questions of, you know, like, why is Jake wearing a BTC jersey? You know, like, I didn't think you were with BTC, and I just wanted to keep it simple. But one of my hopes and dreams, you know, when I started the club, was for the club to eventually have an Olympic athlete. And, you know, we ended up having that Olympic athlete. So, as I said, I feel like I fulfilled the mission of why I started the club and can close it now and then move into a new era this year with a new club and a new brand, and just keep it simple, keep it small, you know, just focus on those that are the most important rather than driving energies into areas that really are just wasted battles. But, you know, your question before was about the overlap of John and Jake. So Jake arrived here in 2017, and Jonathan had passed away in 2018. Jake had his surgery about 2 months after Jonathan's passing, and so when he was coming back, obviously he had like a number of months out with, you know, with no running, and then when he did come back, he was, you know, just doing some minor strength and rehab stuff. So when I sort of needed that few months out, I wasn't really affecting Jake in any way, so I was still just sort of like, you know, writing things and guiding things without knowing what I'd do at the end of the year. But once we sort of got to that end of the year in 2018, you know, I certainly rallied around the few that had stuck by me, and that's when I sort of decided I would get back into coaching and give it a go. And, you know, as I've said a couple of times over the weekend, was we're sort of going back through John's passing and me, that certainly changed me. I know I'm a different coach. I don't know if I'm better or I don't know if I'm worse, but I just, you know, the way I coach now is just keeping things simple and just, you know, not as intense, just, you know, just trying to always make sure that where there is the guiding resource for the athlete and not trying to control it and override it, and realize that they're human beings with feelings. And, you know, like I said, with Jake, having him gone through so much, feel that my role has been more to just have him lean on me and guide him, and let him control his destiny. So, and he's done that remarkably well.
So you mentioned the injury multiple times to Jake. So kind of Haglund's deformity, it was something that, oddly enough, two guys who made the team have dealt with. You know, Galen came back from it, really kind of tried to come back very, very soon, and kind of rushed it to Chicago, dropped out of that race, you know, due to a number of reasons. But the comeback process, what was that like, I guess, for you guys to get that first race on the calendar, you know, in May 2019, when it was just like something low-key in Broomfield?
Yeah, I mean, it was a year later. But, you know, we were very methodical. And, you know, one thing I don't like to do is to rush things. And, you know, if we need to take extra time to get things right, you know, I'm prepared to do that. And, you know, and I think, like, when I coach my athletes, I'm very, very clear in regards to that. You know, I don't want them to go from zero to hero and then fall apart. I want them to take the time and build up. And, you know, we had a couple of minor setbacks with Jake, you know, like just in the early parts of it, of loading it up too quickly or doing too much of doing his weight and strength work and then trying to incorporate running into that as well. I know that he's worked extremely diligent with his strength coach in Kevin Purvis, so been very mindful of doing that right. But yeah, when Broomfield rolled around, like, I mean, again, he raced it with 100% of the fitness that he had at the time. And then he went into Boulder Boulder, and then that was sort of like another step up for him. We were just going to do the citizens race, but someone had pulled out of the professional race, so I just threw him in there. And, you know, typical Jake, he's up there for 4 miles and given everything he's got, and then he just ran out of legs in the final 2 miles. So just everything that we did was just building a little layer, a little layer, a little layer until we got to Chicago. I mean, the only thing that didn't go well before Chicago was the U.S. say 20k champs. I think that was just another different stress for him, and he probably just memory wise had forgotten how to be comfortable with uncomfortable in that duration. But he certainly absorbed it, got over it, and then when he went into Chicago, obviously it was the perfect race. It was the perfect race for a lot of people. I mean, it was just the day of perfect pacing, great weather, and so many people ran well. And then after Chicago, obviously there was a discussion of, you know, like, what do we do with training now? And, you know, as I told him, he will follow exactly the same thing that we did in Chicago. So I measured out the training blocks of what we would do. But I just said, what we do, we execute better, we be more consistent, and hopefully your body will absorb it more. And I know for me as an athlete, I probably made that mistake. I got a bit of success, and then I would want to start training harder or incorporate different things into my training, because I would always be thinking that all these extra 1%ers would make me better, but it didn't. It just got me more tired. So simplicity is key, and that's all I've tried to do with Jake.
Kind of, you mentioned the Chicago and just how perfect that day was. 210, 36, ninth place, top American. That definitely had him thrown into the conversation of, like, okay, this guy could be an Olympic team contender. But for you, as someone who watches him fairly closely and knows everything that he's up to, that sort of label that got thrown on him afterwards must have popped into your head some sort of, like, weeks in advance. When did you first get that sign of, this guy could be someone to mess with in Atlanta?
I saw him in 2012 at the Club Cross Country Championships in Kentucky. He smashed the living daylights out of people, and that was when he was with Keith and Kevin Hansen. And so, you know, I'm that advocate for cross country, and I just saw how much of a beast he was on that day. So I've always known that he's had the ability, and always known that he's a real precocious talent. But the thing was, he just hasn't been healthy, and, you know, and as I said, he had a lot of other things that were prohibiting him from being his true self. And, you know, when we went to Chicago, obviously I had said I thought he was in 211, 212 shape. And my talk to him the day before the race was that, you know, when you get to 25K, don't make a move before 25 kilometres. But I wanted to look around and I wanted to ask myself three questions. And the simple one, you know, is anyone in that group better than you? Two, is anyone in that group gone through what you've gone through personally? And three, is anyone in that group more hungrier than you for success? And I said, and then I want you to turn it up. I want you to like really make it work. I want you to take all the frustrations that you've had over the last 3 years, and I want you to make people pay and like really be aggressive. And, you know, he did that. And then I was like, wow, like, I mean, all right, you know, now we obviously move into the next phase of trying for the Olympic trials. And, you know, the conversation I had with him the day before the race was nothing like Chicago. You know, he's in a different headspace, like things are really going well. He's doing his masters, he's tutoring, he's got a stable relationship. And I just had said to him, I was like, Jake, like tomorrow you have the opportunity to be an Olympian. You know, you have something that as a kid you dreamed about. And, you know, I said, I want you to run into it. I want you to embrace it. I want you to be excited about it. I want you to not have fear. I don't want you to use anger or the other things that have happened. I want this to be a pathway of light that you just embrace and enjoy. And it happened. Like I told him, he wasn't allowed to leave before 30K, and I did get a little bit nervous when the four guys had taken away at about 13-14 miles. But again, like Chicago, we just had the day, everything fell into place. You know, Galen up front was throwing those surges off the front, and he was taking the sting out of the legs of everyone else. And Jake just got locked into that 445-448 pace, and he was then just focused on chasing forward and, you know, like just running into it. And it turned out unbelievably well. As I said, it's just a dream come true for him. So in both facets, just the mindset that we've had's been different. The process of the training has been exactly the same. But to your point, when did I think he could, you know, do it? I knew that if I could get him healthy when he was here in Boulder, that he'd be able to do it. And he obviously proved me right.
I got chills when you were recounting that pump up before Chicago, and then just sort of in the days leading up to Atlanta, in a bunch of the interviews that he did, he just kept harping on this mantra that he said was the whole thesis of this entire training block, which is no more next time. When did that mantra really start to come into fruition? Was that something that the two of you developed or that he mentioned to you at any point?
No, that's a personal thing. And that's what I love about the story is, you know, that was personal to him. Like, as an athlete myself, I had a lot of mantras that were just personal to me. It wasn't me telling the world or telling friends, like, they were my vices of what got me up in the morning, what made me go to do my gym work, what made me have my diet, what made me get my physical therapy. Like, they were important mantras to me. And I think that was pretty cool when I had heard about that after the race, but that was Jake's mantra, that it was personal to him, which, you know, showed that, you know, for him, you know, like, he was throwing everything into it. And even though we hadn't talked about it, it wasn't anything that was a secret. It was just a given that, you know, he was putting everything into it. So I think from an individual point of view, that was a pretty cool thing to hear after the race, that was something that he did extra himself to motivate himself to make sure that he did everything and left no stone unturned.
For the actual race execution, you mentioned that the plan was, you know, just kind of don't go too early or anything like that. And you mentioned a little bit of a concern once the 15-mile move happened from Galen and he started pushing the pace. But what did you – because there's a point, I think, where the broadcasters are like, you know, it's down to four guys. This is the race here. But I could kind of see in the splits that Jake was still clawing back. You never ruled him out.
No, I got nervous, but I just felt that that was the best plan. And we have done in this training segment a number of things to prepare for that. I mean, we've been doing workouts like this thing called Telefarm, which people wouldn't even know what it is. But, you know, it's like a 5K warm-up, and then it's like 4 miles of hill work on a cross-country course, you know, like just really cranking hills. And then when you get back, you do the 5K push all the way back uphill to to the finish. I've had him on Wednesdays running Magnolia Road, which everyone's familiar with the name Magnolia Road in Boulder, which is just a really rolling 15 miles of dirt road. I really factored in the things that I felt that was going to be a true cross-country runner's course. And I was fearful that if Jake went early, he might be a casualty of the course, and that this was going to be something that just required a lot of maturity. And, to back yourself by just going a little bit later. This is a tough race. Like, this is a pressure cooker race. Everyone's on that start line, 200 men. This is their one chance. It's a very unique racing situation. It's just like the Japanese. Like, it's an all-or-nothing scenario. And Jake had to back himself. And, he stuck to the plan. And, I left. We were, about 2 miles away. I left when he was probably at 21 miles. And I was running to the finish line. And I had my wife on the phone telling me what was going on. But there must have been a delay, because when I ran into where the finish line was, I couldn't see anything. And Galen had come in, and then I just saw three bodies, and I didn't know if Jake was second. And, I'm still getting the commentary, but it felt like it was like a 10-second delay or whatever. And then I had a friend, Bob Metzler, tell me he was second, and that he sort of looked up and I saw him. And so the emotion of what was caught by one of the TV journalists in Atlanta that was put out on Twitter, that was just roaring in the moment. I didn't know. And then it was just like, oh my God, you're going to the Olympics. And like I said, everything, not everything in my head's playing normal at the moment, because I've jumped around from different things on that day. And it just, it's just crazy. I can't really just describe how everything unfolded. But the fact that he executed the plan 100% to what I felt was needed to make the team, again, is just a testament to him. Like, at any time, he could have got a little bit antsy and felt that at 15 miles he needed to go with that move. He could have got tripped up early like others. Like, I was very mindful of him staying wide of trouble. Like, little things, don't take a drink at the first 2 miles stop, because, if you need a drink at the first 2 miles, then we're in a lot of trouble. Like, stay out of that. People be trying to cut across everyone. So, just be patient, be smart, don't counteract surges or moves, because then that's going to eventually take the sting out of your legs. And then just when you get to 30k, just go run for it, chase, peg back whoever you've got to peg back, and if you're in front, run like there's no tomorrow. So like I said, it all unfolded. But as I was running that last 2 miles, I have no idea what was going on.
Yes! Yes! I told you! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh! A fucking Olympian! Oh my God! Mate, this is the stuff, the freaking stories, man. You did it. Oh, this is your moment.
Welcome to the club. Welcome to the club.
Oh, you beautiful. In that embrace and the hug that you guys had at the finish line, you said, "Welcome to the club," which I thought was awesome. What do you remember about the first moment that, I guess, you competed in your first Olympics or qualified and getting welcomed into that family?
Yeah, look, I was extremely lucky to grow up with Robert DiCostello and Steve Monteghetti. And, the Olympics is such a huge honour. I mean, basically any national representative team that you make is a massive honour. And we've had a tradition for a number of years that if you make a major championship and you're wearing the Australian uniform, and if you have to DNF in a race, you're to take the singlet off and leave it on the side of the road. That's how passionate we are about it. And so when I followed in the footsteps of my childhood heroes, it was just an amazing thing, that I got to be an Olympic athlete just like them. And there's no such thing as a past Olympian or an ex-Olympian. You're an Olympian for life. And so knowing that, and then just knowing what Jake did, and just knowing that we're part of this unique and special club, was just, again, Yeah, it hasn't sunk in. It's just like, you know, he did it, and you know, I just, you know, just a massive hat tip. Like, it's just, and I think, you know, the most important part is that you know, as we get through this next month, and you know, obviously Jake enjoys it, that, you know, the work's not done. He still has to make the start line, and if he gets injured and he doesn't make the team, then whoever was fourth is obviously going to be making the team, and then Jake doesn't get to be that Olympian. So I think it's very important that, even though we got caught up in all this emotion that happened after the race, that the job now has to start again, and I've got to keep him healthy and fit, and I've got to get him on the start line ready to run the best race of his life. And if I do all that, then we've completed exactly what's required to be an Olympic athlete.
There's also the underlying, you know, elephant in the room with the whole coronavirus stuff, but we don't need to dive into that, because it still seems somewhat early for anyone to make a judgment call on the Olympics. You've mentioned multiple times before about just keeping the training simple and like the simplicity to it. I saw in a tweet that you pretty much outlined Jake's training for a 16-week block. And so what you wrote was Sunday, 2 hours, 30 minutes. Monday, first session is 50 to 60 minutes. Evening, 35 minutes. Tuesday, you know, you have a track session. After that, evening, 35 minutes. Wednesday, hour 45. Thursday, 50 minutes. Evening, 35. Friday, track session or workout, whatever it is. And evening, 35 minutes. Saturday, 50 to 60 minutes. Evening, 35 minutes. You went on to expand on it. 3-hour long run, 6 weeks out. 18-mile progression run, 3 weeks out. So when you look at this training, what is it that really stood out, or kind of, if someone were to pick it up and be like, this is an Olympian's training, is there anything really, really special to it?
No. There's not, but you've just got to do it, like, you know, you've got to do it every day and every week and every month. And, you know, these things take 1, 2, 3 years to build. And the key to success is time. But as human beings, we're impatient because we want to get there quickly. And so we're prepared to throw in extra things, and we're prepared to do more and make it harder than it needs to be. And, you know, I said that that's a mistake I made as an athlete myself. And so, you know, trying to make sure that Jake does what is needed to be done, and it doesn't have to be anymore. He's just got to do it faster, and he's just got to do it better. You know, I had Andy Borthert ask me the other day, you know, he just said, well, you know, Jake's lead-in wasn't that good. You know, he didn't have a great run when he ran the rock and roll half marathon in Arizona. But what people didn't know was that Jake, we'd got out of Boulder because the weather was, you know, we'd had a lot of snow, and off just heavy training, I entered him in the race, and what he was supposed to do was to run the first 10 miles at 5-minute mile pace, and then after that he was able to run as fast as he could for the last 5K. Obviously the course was 300 meters short, we know that, but it was irrelevant. It didn't faze us that it was short, because we were just there for a pure training stimulus. And now that I say that to you, and I'm actually saying it out loud, it worked great, because in that race, everyone took off. Jake had to be smart. He had to be patient. He had to make sure that he was still running 5-minute mile pace. And then as soon as he got to that 10-mile mark, he was to go as hard as he could, try and catch as many people as he could. But just that change in mindset of going from being controlled, being left behind, you know, still trying to stay in rhythm, but then having confidence when it was time to go. And that's what we did when we ran the Olympic trials. It was just the same mindset. So, you know, we don't have to smash our training. We don't have to break world records in our training. We don't even have to do workouts faster every single time that we do them. You just got to do the whole block better and be consistent and not get injured, not get run down, you know, get the adequate rest that's required and do the gym work that's needed. And that's what he did. And so I know going into the Olympics, there's a bit of a mindset of, you know, it's the Olympics, it's the one chance, I've got to train harder. My job will just be to pull him back and just keep reminding him that we've just got to keep it simple and just get to the start line healthy.
So in your sort of, like, it's funny how that whole rock and roll kind of practice ended up playing out in favor of for the trials. One thing that I guess he didn't do at rock and roll was grabbing this flag with 600 meters to go. I know you probably missed it while you were running to the finish, but what would you have thought? I mean, I don't know if you've seen the clip yet of that.
He's told me, yeah, he told me he didn't know. He said there was just someone standing there with a flag, and it just got handed to him. He didn't know. And so he grabbed it, and he was like, within that half a second, he's like, hang on, I've still got Abdi and Lenny Career. And so then he just, like, he went for it. So, like, he doesn't know. It was just one of those instant things. He didn't grab it thinking, yes, I'm going to wave the flag and I'm going to the Olympics. Just someone handed it to him, and instinctively he grabbed it. But then within that next half a second, he was like, hang on, this race is not over. Like, what? He's just like, what is going on? And obviously ran through the finish line. And Jake's not that type of guy, you know, like, he just, so he doesn't know himself. He grabbed it and then was just like, what am I doing? The race isn't over.
It's to the people watching in the media room, we were just like, I can't believe that this, you have to outkick a 59-second half marathoner with a flag in your hand now. People were holding their breaths. So in addition to kind of just the old school ways, you know, the simplicity in the training, the thing a lot of people have been talking about, and we have to address, is the shoes, right? But yep. You can't give the shoes too much credit for to outweigh the hard work that Jake has put in, sort of. So what was the behind-the-scenes conversation with the shoes when Jake was at the press conferences on Thursday? He said he had not put on a pair of the Alpha Flies before. He had run in the Next Percents. Everyone knows that he turned down a contract offer to be able to have this option. So between you and him, from Thursday evening when he's doing the strides in the shoes for the first time to getting to the starting line, what was the decision making there?
So look, this was a conversation that we had very early on, and we obviously know from 2016 that there was discussion, you know, about athletes wearing shoes that other athletes weren't wearing, and that changed. Probably wouldn't have changed the outcome, but there's always that speculation that all things weren't equal, and if all things were equal, that possibly, you know, the top three that went wouldn't have gone. And so I had mentioned to Jake that, you know, look, I want all things to be equal. Like I said, we could shop you around and get you an offer, but if you're standing on that start line and you finish fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh, you know, is the conversation going to be that you didn't have the shoes? And look, there's certainly placebo in this discussion, but there's also performance. Like, it is, there's no question. Like, every researcher has said that there is performance aiding in the shoe, and well, I certainly see the benefit is in the second half of the race. Like, people aren't fatigued. Like, normally they would fatigue and their hips would drop and they start slapping the ground. Like, these guys are still just bouncing off and still rolling, and they're not getting the natural fatigue that they would have got, obviously, in a shoe that's not as superior as these. So And I'm sort of selling my soul a little bit as a person, because if this was happening in my day, I'd be furious, right? And as an athlete, you want to stand on the line, you want the best person to win based on training and effort and all equipment being equal. I mean, that's what's made the marathon great. You know, it was always the guy that slowed down the least would win. So coming into this situation, like, it was just like, all right, I'm a coach. I've got to take my personal views and thoughts and put them aside and work out what's the best thing to do with my athlete. Now, we've done nothing illegal. World Athletics has approved the shoe. And so we've worked within the guidelines and the rulings that's been set. And so, yeah, Jake had the option to either wear the Next Percents or the Alpha Flies. He'd worn them in the hotel on the Thursday night, and so on the Friday he's like, there's not really much difference. And so I was like, we're going outside, we're going to do strides, we're going to try on both shoes, which he did. And then I got him to put the Next Percent on one foot and the Alpha Flies on another foot and told him to do another stride. And that's when he said he felt a difference in the shoe. Then I've had people say, well, you know, you're an idiot. Like, why would you let someone wear a brand new shoe? I think people don't realize that we now live in a day and age that if you actually have to break in a shoe the shoe's not good. You know, like they've got foam, they've got a mesh upper, like they are scientifically developed for people to be able to put them on and to perform and run well. Obviously, you want to make sure that the width of your foot fits in the shoe. Now, you don't want there to be slipping and sliding, and the length has to be right, but that's why you probably wear them and do strides and do all those things with them. But, you know, back in the day when they were all leather uppers, that's why you had to break them in, because they were so stiff. And if you didn't break them in, you'd get blisters. So I wasn't concerned on that. But more importantly, I leaned on Jake. It was Jake's decision. He had to make the choice of which shoes he was going to wear and which ones he felt comfortable in. He said he felt comfortable in the Alpha Fly. And we're like, that's it. That's the discussion. And so, you know, there's no doubt the work that he put in and the story that he's told, you know, like I'd made mention of, you take a look at the equipment that he used for his rehab was like tennis balls and duct tape. And, you know, in the race, we just used flat coke. You know, I'm a big believer of a flat coke in the latter stages with the caffeine and the sugar. And, you know, he's wearing a pair of secondhand glasses that he found, you know, like, so there's a lot of things that was just, you know, that was all thrown into the mix, and the shoes just happened to be one of them. Do I think they helped in his performance? Yes. I'm not going to be a hypocrite and say that they didn't, that everyone in that race had the opportunity, I guess, if they weren't sponsored, to do the same thing. So just like I said, so many things all come together that allowed Jake to have the day that he had.
The Coca-Cola is so classic. So when did you guys implement that into just the last couple stations?
Yeah, I mean, everyone thinks I'm an idiot because it's just like, you know, we've got all these, you know, brands now that obviously are really high in glucose and, you know, carbs. And but, you know, I just go back to Frank Shorter, you know, and I look at the guys after Frank that used it, and I used it in my marathons, and I definitely felt that it worked. And so when we did Chicago, you know, I'd said to Jake that he tried it and he hadn't. And so we practice it, particularly when we were doing our 18-mile progression runs. And he seemed to enjoy it. He definitely felt like just that change of taste certainly helped, and it worked. And so again, going into the Olympic trials, it's like, well, we'll continue and do what works, and if it's not broke, keep going. And so we just went, did it again, and he definitely felt like, again, just it just gave him that extra boost when he needed it.
Plus, it was Atlanta. Like, it only feels right because they have, like, the Museum of Coca-Cola and everything there.
I know. Everyone's like, oh, did you go to the museum? And I'm like, no, I didn't have time for any of that. But, yeah, like I said, just those little things that, you know, I look at all the greats in the 80s and 90s, and, you know, they were all, like, you know, 2.8, 2.9, 2.10 guys. And I think sometimes we get too far ahead of ourselves with science and technology and all these things, and we do forget that there are some more simplistic ways to help. And that's sort of where I think I maybe calibrated just a little bit better, particularly with my athletes, not better than other people, but just with my athletes.
Last thing I've got for you, Coach, is sort of like just through my own like reporting from, you know, a couple months back and just over the years of seeing you on Twitter, it's like you're very vocal of, you know, in favor of clean sport, and have had your own criticisms, I guess, of like the Nike Oregon Project. So seeing someone like Galen Wynn, to some people, might have been like a little dismaying, even though like hasn't been implicated in anything, in any wrongdoing, but still just kind of like his association to NOP and Salazar. And if we watch kind of like those final couple miles, there were so many people who I could see on the sidelines were just like really screaming for Jake. And so it's kind of like there's this one really interesting story that people can root for in these next couple months as they get ready for the Olympics, something that seems a little bit purer and, like, I guess, like cleaner. Is that, I guess, like for you as someone who deals with him daily, why is he kind of like someone that people should be rooting for?
Well, I think just because of his story, you know, like he's a kid that has faced adversity and, you know, been able to come out on top, and, you know, he continued with his dream, and, you know, like he was making no money. He's like, he's doing his master's and his tutoring to get by, and this is all before, obviously, he had the success that he had in Chicago. And, you know, I think, like, that's like 99% of our runners, right? And, you know, people that are going through that hardship and the trials and tribulations to try and have success. And so I think they can relate more more to someone like Jake because that's them. Like, they see themselves there. I mean, I've spoken to so many people around the world. Like, the interest in this race, you know, from Spain to Australia to England, you know, it's just, it's on a different level. And, you know, the conversations that I'm having with so many people is just that. Like, they can actually relate to Jake as that blue-collar guy and, you know, having that success based on all his hardships, which is no different to them. Like, they question whether they should do the sport. They're, you know, they've been injured, you know, like, they're not sure if they're on the right pathway. You know, they're not sure whether they should roll the dice again. But then they see Jake, and then they say to themselves, well, it's worth it. You know, like, it would be worth it if you could, you know, achieve half of what Jake was able to do. So I think that's where the common theme and thread comes in. I mean, obviously, you know, the Nike Oregon project, you know, was a multi-million dollar project. You know, they had doctors 24/7, they had altitude camps, they had underwater treadmills, they had the best technology, they had everything, right? And so, you know, granted, you still have to be a good athlete, but they're given perks and opportunities that 99% of other people don't get. So there's, you know, there's jealousy, obviously, and there's obviously, you know, an us versus their mentality. But when we stepped out there to race on Saturday, like, this was all about Jake. You know, this wasn't about, okay, we're going to be the advocates for clean sport, you know, or that we want to beat anyone in particular. Like, we wanted Jake to make the Olympic Games because this was about him and his moment. And so that's where I feel like, you know, if we stay on this course, we're fine. I mean, Jake needs to just worry about himself. And, you know, I'm obviously a huge advocate for clean sport. I mean, I was an athlete for 20 years. Like, I've seen, you know, and I've heard and I've been around, you know, this whole doping epidemic. And, you know, it's just heartbreaking now that, you know, we see performances that we're unsure whether they're clean or whether they're not. And there's obviously so much speculation, and, you know, where they say there's smoke, there's fire. And I don't know, it's just disappointing. And as I said, me as a past athlete, I'll advocate that. But as a coach, my priority is to advocate it with my athletes, obviously, but just to stay focused on them and not get too caught up in fighting things that are trivial or be out of my control.
Coach, I'm sure you're still on cloud nine. It'll take a little bit of a while to come back down, but congrats again, and I really appreciate you taking the time for this.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate your time as well.
That's all for this episode of the show. Many thanks to Coach Troop for the chat. If you listened to this episode and enjoyed it, give us a shout out on your Instagram stories. We will repost it to all our followers, and this helps new people discover the show. You can also consider leaving us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. Many thanks to Stride for sponsoring the show. They're helping ensure that you nail that perfect pacing strategy so you can keep a consistent effort in challenging conditions. It's all happening in real time. I'm digging all of the data that's being collected and sent to me, and you can get on that too by visiting stride.com/Sidious. That's STRYD.com/Sidious. I've been your host, Chris Chavez, wishing you some happy and healthy running. And don't forget, legs are feeling good. Jake Riley, hopefully coming on the show pretty soon.